name is Jared Zarletta. I'm the area manager for Air Methods. We operate the Mercy Air Base, Mercy Air 20 at Fort Hunter Liggett in California. It is a military contract where we support the fort here and the regular operations, a lot of training operations for various units come here from really all over, but primarily on the West Coast. We're here as a 24/7, 365 response in the event that there was, you know, any sort of training accident or injury on base, or even for the few permanent personnel that live at the base. If there's a medical emergency with a family member, we're here to get them safely to a higher level of care, just because this is a very remote location and there's not a lot of medical services that can get you anywhere you need to go very quickly.
And it's beyond on base, right? Say there was an emergency on 101 or King City, you might respond to that?
Sure. So we do work with Monterey County and the surrounding counties as well if the need ever arose. But if there is an incident off the post here, then the normal course of action would be that the Monterey County EMS would ask the Fort Hunter Liggett Fire Department, who is our contractor or contracting representative, mm-hmm. They would ask us to then go respond to that, and they have to authorize it. It is an approval process because we are dedicated to serving this military base. So if there are operations going on here that they need us here for, there are other air assets nearby. Namely, we just opened another base in Paso Robles, which is 40-minute drive from here, a lot shorter of a flight. So if there's a situation where we can't go, then they're a short hop away.
On base 24/7, how many helos are typically stationed here, and how many are airworthy, ready to take off on a moment's notice?
So the contract requires that we're operational 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. So aircraft obviously need maintenance once in a while. There's no way to, you know, just work on them and expect to stay in service. So we do have a backup aircraft here. The primary aircraft is a 412, a Bell 412, and that gives us the ability to take multiple patients if there is a mass casualty event where there's critical patients that need to get to, again, a higher level of care. But it also gives us the ability to take a lot of weight or passengers in that situation. Very few helicopters have that capability at a reasonable operating cost. So the Bell 412 allows us to do that. For the backup, we have a BK-117, which is slightly less capable airframe, but when there's maintenance going on one of them, we're in the other one.
On your primary aircraft, what's the maximum number of patients that you can carry?
This is something we can probably let Leslie talk about more, because that's going to depend upon the injury.
On this base, it's sleepy sometimes, but I've been on base when there have been 10,000 troops training with strikers and whatnot. So you could have something horrible go down and have to respond big time to, like you said, a mass casualty.
Absolutely, yeah. I was recently retired out of the Marine Corps, and I was up here in 2014, and I remember we brought something along the lines of 2,000, 2,500 Marines here within a matter of a couple of days. So it's very common here for the ranges to get used like that by units that are getting ready to deploy as pre-deployment exercises. So it can go from zero to several thousand in a matter of days or even hours.
And the crew aboard each aircraft, you have a pilot and a flight officer?
We have one pilot, and then we have a nurse and a medic.
My name is Leslie Brown. I'm a flight paramedic here at Fort Hunter Liggett. Our crew consists of a pilot, a flight nurse, and a flight medic. So we have additional critical care training for the paramedic and the nurse. They also provide us with extensive FAA-required aviation training so that we do know a little bit about what's going on in the cockpit and can assist should there be an emergency with the aircraft.
Possible you could land it.
No. I wouldn't go that far. But we are able to read their charts in an emergency to help with crew resource management and make it safer for everybody on board the aircraft.
So when you're airborne, are you backseat?
On the way to the scene,
yeah.
One medical crew member is up front with the pilot.
Okay.
And then when we're transporting, both the medical crew members are caring for the patient.
How many litters can be in the back?
We have two there on either side, so we can take two patients laying supine or laying on their backs. Mm-hmm. In addition, we have two other seats that we can transport patients. So depending on the weight capacity, which is up to the pilot that day and our fuel load and such, we could carry four patients depending on how critical they are in nature. Mm-hmm. Generally, we don't like to take more than two critical patients because there are only two of us in the back.
Yeah, I was going to say you'd be super busy.
Yeah, but we did just have a multi-casualty incident here last summer with the fires. Where we transported three total between this aircraft and the aircraft in Paso. So it is nice having a sister base really close.
Yeah, no kidding. And to fly to Paso, how long?
The flight to Paso is about 10 minutes. It's a beautiful flight. Yeah. Definitely different than the drive.
And over here?
My name is Jason Martin. I'm the pilot here at 400 Liggett right now. I'm actually a relief pilot. I kind of travel around and cover a lot of different bases on and off here for about 3.5 years now.
Is your background military training?
I am military, but I was a grunt in the military, so I'm civilian trained as far as helicopters goes. After a time of riding in the back of those things, you kind of want to get up front eventually. So,
what other bases do you guys have? It's Mercy Air.
So Mercy Air is one of our California and Nevada bases. The program name is Mercy Air. Air Methods owns all of our programs. We have over 300 bases in 48 states.
Wow.
Flying over 400 aircraft. So pretty much anywhere you go, you will find an Air Methods program. Here in California, we have a number of bases in Southern California, as well as Merced, Mariposa, and then the SkyLife program in Fresno is also an Air Methods program. So,
interesting.
One thing that I really like about our company is that they give us all the training and tools we need to take care of the patient at the moment and the immediate need, but our company goes beyond that and takes care of the patient even when they're recovering by making sure they don't get any surprise bills and letting them focus on just recovering rather than dealing with medical bills.
We're about 26 miles from US 101. Let's say I was in a head-on and you guys were called to extract and I don't have insurance. What happens?
We're still gonna come.
I think it's important to note what's really important when we get these calls, we get zero information. We don't know what's wrong with the patient. We know how many there is, and we know how far away you are, and that's
right.
It.
So
we're already in the air well before we even know what's wrong with you, let alone whether or not you have insurance or what you're...
Not an issue. Not an operative at all.
No, it's for us, as a flight crew, you're going to get to where you're going no matter what.
Talk about range of operation. Let's say that I'm severely burnt, and you know that you got to get me to Stanford or to Fresno. Can you make it to both from here?
We sure can.
Okay.
We have a very extensive range. We are well versed on the different capabilities of the receiving hospitals, both locally and pretty much statewide. That way, in case, for instance, Stanford is weathered in, we can't get in there because the cloud layer is too low, we can take you to Fresno. We always have alternate options and alternate ways of getting you to the definitive care that you need. And we're more than willing to go by ground if for some reason the weather changes while we're waiting to extricate you from the car. We can take all our gear, get in the ambulance, and provide that critical care
on the ground.
Yep, on the ground, all the way to the hospital.
Wow, very cool.
Yeah.
Back to primary mission. Again, the reason that you're here on an Army base, Army Reserve, is that's your primary reason. Take care of issues that happen on base, right?
That's correct.
So talk to us about, back in time, things that have happened, the things that have gone wrong that you had to respond.
Well, pre-COVID, this base, during the summer especially, gets very, very busy. And then the heat out here gets to be 100 plus on a regular basis.
At 8 a.m.
Yes, at 8 a.m. And we have a lot of reservists coming out to do their summer training who aren't used to this heat and aren't acclimated. So there have been times where we've had three back-to-back-to-back transports, heat-related illnesses mixed in with other trauma issues. We see a lot of vehicle rollovers and such just because people aren't used to driving those vehicles on a daily basis and then come out here and are asked to do it under stressful circumstances.
Talk to us for a moment about flying in adverse conditions. What are your limits?
Oh, it's not my favorite thing to do, but you know, we have company minimums. They're basically set by the FAA over years and years of how to keep the helicopter EMS industry just safer in general. But more than that, every pilot has their own personal minimums. When it really comes down to it, when we're in this mountainous terrain that we're in over here, company minimums are usually lower than what my personal minimums or my crew's personal minimums are.
More conservative?
More conservative, much more. And the reality is you can check weather as much as you want, you know, in Paso or and Salinas, but we're in a really remote area here where there's no weather checking around where we are.
Right.
It's, you got to go outside and see if you can see the mountains or not.
Put your finger up.
Yeah. So it's something we do every day. You know, I brief the crew as soon as they come in on shift. We kind of make a plan. This is what we can expect throughout the day. And when the call comes, it should be a quick minute to minute and a half of us talking about what the weather's looking like, if it's changed or not. But the big thing is, all three of us, you know, have to agree that it's a go. We're going to go take the call. And that's before we even leave the door.
So visual is huge.
Visual is really big out here. It sounds weird, but if we can see certain peaks of certain mountains around us, we know what the minimums are. And if we can get out of our little area that we're in to where there is weather reporting stations. So visual is very big where we are right now. Again, it's just being familiar with the area that we're used to flying in.
And the other variable that I know you would deal with would be wind and turbulence and updrafts of the mountains and whatnot. How do you counter and deal with that and anticipate?
We're lucky to be flying an aircraft that is it's heavy. It takes a lot of wind to move that thing around. We're sitting at almost 12,000 pounds a lot of times. Luckily, turbulence, it's got to be pretty windy for us to have that sort of thing. You know, when winds start getting up to 30, 40, 50 miles an hour, it's going to be an uncomfortable ride, or we're not going to take the call. You know, at some point, we have to just step back and look at it from a safety perspective. Luckily, where we are here, that very rarely happens. I mean, we're looking at kind of thunderstorm-type conditions for the wind to get that bad. 30 knots is no problem in the aircraft we fly, though, and I'd say that's about what the most we get on a normal day.
So 20, 30, pretty stable.
Yeah, it's a very stable aircraft. It can really take a lot of wind, and you won't even really feel it. It's just got a lot of weight to it, so. Yeah.
Right now, well, you have four staff people here in the office. How many typically are on duty at one time?
So we fly with a three-man crew, three-person crew, I should say. We have a pilot, a flight nurse, and a flight paramedic. If for some reason we are short a flight paramedic, we can also fly with two nurses. And that's our regular staffing. So generally, there's just three of us here. Our pilots change halfway through the day. They fly 12-hour shifts, but our med crew flies a 24-hour shift.
So at any moment in time, you're going to have, what, four or five people?
Generally, it's just the three of us,
three.
And then
okay.
we change.
But right now, you've got one, two, three, four.
Yes. See? Well, we wanted to be available for you, so I came
in.
I'm not on shift right now.
All right. Well, I appreciate
it. So if they get a call, they're out of here.
Okay. Appreciate that a lot. A little bit more, Jared. I don't want to leave anything on the table. Things that are important for you to share with the listener on the Central Coast.
Just I'd say a couple of things that, you know, we'd like everybody to know. Air Methods is hiring. We've been doing a really big recruitment push for over a year now.
For paramedics, nurses, pilots,
for paramedics,
everybody.
Nurses, pilots, mechanics, primarily. We are heavily recruiting, and there are some requirements, though. So, for instance, I believe for clinical, we got to have 3 years of ICU experience. Specifically on the nursing side, pilots need 2,000 hours. There's some other minimums, and you can anyone interested can check out our website, airmethods.com, on the careers page to look at those specific requirements. Like here, because we have a special aircraft in the Bell 412, the contract does require that any pilot coming into this position has a significant amount of 412 time. So that can be one of the challenges at times, is finding the right people to work at this specific base. But Air Methods overall, you know, with all the bases we have in the Mercy Air program or SkyLife program nearby, anyone that's interested in exploring that has the minimum time is absolutely welcome and encouraged to apply. Or they can just reach out to our HR, or it's our recruiting team.
And
they can answer any specific
website.
Questions. airmethods.com.
That's easy. So let's talk a moment about your Paso Robles operation. That's fairly new. It's an addition.
It opened last August.
What is there?
I'm going to let Leslie talk about it, because she was a big part of getting that base open.
Paso Robles base is slightly different. We have a very unique mission profile here, where we support both the military operation and the community. The Paso Robles base is a community-based service, so they service the entire San Luis Obispo County, as well as Southern Monterey County. They border both Kern County, Kings County, and Fresno County on the east side of
San Luis. Santa Barbara?
They can service Santa Barbara as well. There has never been a medevac aircraft dedicated to San Luis, stationed in San Luis until the Paso Robles base opened in August.
So it's a game changer.
It is a game changer for the residents. I grew up in San Luis County and worked the ground ambulance and fire engine for years. I saw the need there for a lot of years, and it wasn't until I came to work for Air Methods that I realized that we could really do some good and change could be made. So
that's really cool.
Having that base in Paso is exciting. It's staffed again with a pilot, a flight nurse, and flight medic.
And you have two helos there?
They have one.
One.
An EC-135, so it is also IFR capable, mm-hmm. which means it can do instrument-rated approaches and such.
Oh, nice.
It is staffed with all the same equipment, same training, so we're basically a little flying ICU or ER. They are as well.
That's really cool. And your backup, let's say something mechanical happened to that aircraft, would you maybe bring one from here?
Right. That's the beauty of working for a company that is the largest medevac operator in the world. We have aircraft that can come from all over the state at a moment's notice to support an operation that may need help. So we have our aircraft here that can be used as a spare elsewhere, as well as the aircraft in Fresno. Southern California, really, when you're flying, isn't that far away. So they have backup aircraft down there as well that can come up.
Right now, we're in southern Monterey County. Going north, where is the next Mercy Air base?
The next Mercy Air base to the north would be inland in Merced and Mariposa.
So they'd be going into the Sierras then, huh?
Yep, they do. They fly into Yosemite. I have yet to be able to fly in, but I hear it's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, nice ride.
But we get the Big Sur coastline, so
right.
I can't really be too sad about it.
And just a moment back, you touched on the fires, the Big Sur fire, and people don't realize I was on base when that was happening, and it was right over your shoulder. I mean, it was eerie.
It was right over our shoulder. I have some pictures of the fire encroaching onto the base. It actually came onto Fort Hunter Liggett property, and the fire department here did an amazing job of making sure it didn't get too close for comfort.
Mm-hmm.
But that did involve, we had some firefighters that got burned over. It was really awesome to be a part of taking care of them in their time of need. That's something that I find just very fortunate about this job, is getting to be impactful to somebody on their worst day, really, because every time we get launched, it's somebody's worst day.
Yeah, no kidding. And ultimately their best day.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
A couple of things we didn't talk about too much. We focused a lot of on our medical mission here, but a big part of what we do, probably, I mean, I'd say 60% of our flying out here is actually supporting the troops that come here to train. For instance, this is a really popular base for the non-commissioned officers, the military police guys that come out here and do their training. So, and we've linked up with the officers that do that, kind of put that training on, and in their third week out here, they'll do a mock mission where they have to extract an injured soldier. It's good training for them. And they'll send up what's called a 9-line, which is 9 lines of information that is what's required to launch a medevac helo. So they'll send that information up to the range control, and they'll give it over to us. It gives us a chance to practice our response time. And we'll come over there, and we'll pick that guy up for him. And that's just one of the things we do. We do that monthly now. The Navy SEALs come out here, and they'll use us for various things. It kind of keeps us on our toes. A lot of times we can go a month without an actual patient flight out here. So for us to stay up on our response time and everything, it's nice to have the troops using us for that sort of thing out here.
Right. I know historically, the British Special Forces, probably not supposed to talk about this, but they jump in here in the middle of the winter.
Yep, they were just out here for almost 4 weeks.
So are you locked and loaded, ready to go for that?
Yeah, we work really closely with them. They brief us every day on what their jump times are, what their plans are, what altitudes, and we don't stage where they're landing, but we are ready. And,
right. And
there's certain times, you know, when there's not a lot of people on base or anything like that, you know, there's a little bit more freedom. Maybe somebody goes for a run or something like that in the middle of the day. But when there's troops on base or something like that going on, when they're jumping, I mean, we're here, we're ready to go and off the ground in under 10 minutes.
I know maybe 3-4 years ago, I was with the 7th Infantry Division. They were training, and remember that? There were like 9,000 troops. Yes. And a lot of it was remote with the strikers and whatnot. Would you move your base of temporary operation to have the helo closer to the action, or you still stay here?
We still stay here. We can respond to anywhere on base. The flight time anywhere on base is under
2 minutes.
2 minutes. Right.
Yeah.
So And range control will brief us what operations are happening, especially when there are a lot of troops on base. We will go over every morning and get a brief on what to expect for the day, so we know what areas of the base are active, are ready. Like Jason said, get off the ground under 10 minutes. We're on scene. My name is Leslie Brown, flight paramedic.
I'm Jared Zaraleta, area manager.
I'm Jason Martin.
And I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Mercier on base at Fort Hunter Liggett in southern Monterey County.
All right. Going around here. Back in. Is it yet, Jared? No touch and go action here. But we're clear of all airspeed now.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolf, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives, and Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. And in fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So yes, please support your local NPR station.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.